Hi, my name's David, and I'm an addict. David, and I'm an addict. Wait, true words were never spoke. You know how this usually goes. You tell how it was, and what happened, and how you are now. I first got turned on to drugs when I was a kid, a musician. And some other musician that I admired handed me a joint. And I smoked it, and I thought it was just peachy. And I smoked a lot of them after that. If you were a musician back when I started, that was sort of part of being a musician. Sooner than I thought it would happen, I ran into somebody who turned me on to acid. I thought that was pretty great, too. Now, there was an early mistake that the people who were trying to discourage us all from doing drugs made. They said that if you took acid, you would A, have bad babies, and B, burn your eyes out looking at the sun. And I knew that wasn't true because I tried it. And I didn't burn out anything. So I figured they were lying. So when they said, don't smoke those reefers, they'll lead to harder stuff, I figured, no, don't feed me that hogwash. And I went blithely on down my road. Now, because they made all of that illegal, you had to go into a fairly illegal society to get what you were looking for. And sooner or later, somebody always comes along and says, that's nothing. Try this. And of course I did. And that was cocaine. Energy for free, sex for a week. I was a very simple-minded kid. That's how I saw it. And I thought it was just fine. To anybody in this room, it will sound absolutely bizarre, but when I first started doing cocaine, which was right after the Civil War, way back there, there were actually a lot of people going around saying, oh, it's not addictive. Yeah, right. And I'm the Easter Bunny. So I got thoroughly into that. And somebody said, well, oh man, that's really not the real thing. The real thing. And they turned me out to some smack. I thought that was pretty good, too. There were some things that kind of slowed me up about it a little. You weren't really having fun unless you were throwing up. And it tended to put a bit of a damper on your sex life, but you didn't care a hell of a lot. Suppose you probably remember that part, but all of these things, I talk about them pretty blithely now because, you know, it's been a while. And you can look back on them and they're easy to laugh about now. They were my life. Now, I started out feeling that being a musician was, you know, like, see, I didn't get into it, you know, to be a star or to get on the cover of Rolling Stone or to get laid or to make a bunch of money. I got into it because, unlike everybody now, I got into it because I really loved music. So I had felt, you know, that music should be the most important thing in my life. You know, just barely ahead of sex, but ahead of it. And so when, after years of abusing these drugs, I kind of looked around and realized that they were getting to be more important than the music, I was kind of pretty surprised, pretty shocked, you know, because you don't really watch yourself. that carefully. As a matter of fact, you tend to not want to watch yourself that carefully. I didn't. But, you know, certain little warning signs start to happen in your life, you know. One day there was a hole through a piece of my nose. Part of my body was missing. And somewhere in there, something should have said, hey, your body's trying to tell you something. There's a piece missing. Didn't quite come through. There's a little fog. I did, however, run into a guy. I was worried by it. I just didn't want to admit it. But I ran into a guy who said, you don't have to snort it. You can smoke it. And that was the beginning of the big, serious, downhill, hit the skids slide. I don't know how many of you were freebasers, but boy, that is the quickest, shittiest way to the bottom there is. I speak from a fair amount of experience, having been sort of a chemical dump site. And, you know, I did enough years with enough different drugs to where I feel I can pretty confidently say that's really shitty. And I did it, and I did it, and I did it, I did it. And no, I didn't stop any of the others. I know it's not real important here, but I also drank, you know, whenever I was coming down or had run out of anything else. And I did all these things concurrently. Well, now there are certain attendant changes that we all go through, right? You start to tell certain kinds of lies to yourself and to other people. You start to trash your relationships. You start to trash your house. And things start to fall by the wayside. Your ability to show up any place on time. Caring about yourself. Brushing your teeth, little things like that. I could see these things happening. But I was in a situation where I could continue to do what it was that I pretty much was supposed to do, even when I was pretty blitzed. Playing music is not an intellectual thing. You know, it's something you do from your heart and almost on an instinctive level after you've done it for enough years. So you can do it when, frankly, when you're twisted, you know. How well you can do it is another matter, you know. But I could always do it well enough to sort of get by. The other problem with it is that normally, in a drug addict's life, aside from the relationships that dissolve around you and the people who start to come to you and say, hey, you know, did you, like, forget your mother's birthday last night? That kind of thing. you tend to get in trouble. Now, I got in trouble a number of times. I used to get busted regularly. But it really all sort of depends on where you get busted. You get busted in Marin County, Mill Valley. The Mill Valley cops and I were, hey Dave, how you doing tonight? You're not carrying that gun, are you? I warned you about that. Don't break it downtown. They would, you know, as often as not, if they caught me with a paper, you know, they would just like, God damn it, David. You know, get out of here. Orange County, even. I got away with it. Because there was an assistant DA who was a fan. You know? I slid on that one. Texas, on the other hand. It's a whole different ball of wax. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh. I got popped in Texas. By the time I got popped in Texas, I was pretty much in full flower, you know. I was, you know, your standard mess. And of course, I thought nobody knew. I thought nobody could tell. I thought I was cooler than shit, sneaking around a corner. Hey, they'll never know. Propane torch this big. They'll never know. Yeah. They busted me. And in all fairness, the judge that I had to deal with there was actually a pretty decent guy. And he knew that I had already made several attempts to, you know, go into treatment or, you know, for one reason or another, and failed. And he said, you know, we're going to put you in treatment. And they sent me off. They made a deal, you know, to send me off to a locked facility in New Jersey, from which I escaped. That day, he's sharp. Yes, sir, thinking all the time. And they caught me, of course, right away, and they brought me back, and they said, remember that great line out of the Paul Newman movie, you know, what we have here is a failure to communicate. That's pretty much how it was. Judge looked at me, I looked at the judge looked at me, shook his head, and he said, okay, son, we're going to send you down to Texas Department of Corrections. Which means Huntsville. Now, I don't know how many of you have done a lot of jail time. I expect some of you have. It's part of better living through chemistry. Yeah, buddy. Yes. And they stuck me in. First, they stuck me in a Dallas County jail. Now, if you're like a connoisseur of jails, you know that the county jails are zoos. They really suck. They are really the lowest. And they put me in a county jail, and I did some time, and a clever lawyer got me out. And I promptly went, oh! Big smoking Dave-sized hole in the ear, you know? Straight to a hotel where a guy was waiting with everything. You know? Not real smart. I went back. This time, they put me in jail, and they put me, in solitary, in a place called Lou Sterrett Justice Center. I remember it well. And I said, why are you putting me in solitary? They said, well, we don't know, but some one of these boys might just want to kill you just to be able to say he done it. Worked for a little while, and then I started to just flat nut up in the cell, because I'm like kind of an outgoing guy, and I like to talk to people and stuff, you know. I wasn't real polished up on this being a jailhead guy yet, and so I said, look, you know, please send me to prison, because I, you know, after you are in population for a while, they explain some things to you, which are, A, that the state prison is better than the jail, because you get a job, and the food is better, and even if there's no telephones, and you got to live on letters, you know, you get to go out and go to your job. You don't have to stay in your house all day, which is easy for yourself. So they did. They said, okay, okay. And they sent me down there. And, it's a real funny thing, you know, is I know that in that prison there was dope. But when you're new in prison, they don't tell you anything because they don't know who you might be. You know, even somebody that they know who you are. They don't know what deal you might have made. So they don't tell you shit. Nobody ever even told me where I could find a joint. There was nothing. It was clang, end of movie. And that was a real interesting experience, because now, drug rehab in a Texas prison is sort of like this. It goes, hey, Vern, look at him. He's rolling around good now. Look at that shit. Hey, rock star, how you feel now? You dumb son of a bitch. Bet you wish you had that money now, don't you, boy? God damn. These were not what you call real rocket scientists. And they wouldn't give you an aspirin. I want you to know, man, I'm sitting there kicking junk and coke at the same time. I'm twirling like a pig on a spit, you know. I don't know which end. I'm just ass over tea kettle. I haven't a clue what's going on, you know. I hadn't been straight in 20 years. I am just like, oh, what am I going to do? And I'm in prison in Texas. And I was flat discouraged. Yeah. Now, like I said, it's easy enough to laugh about it now, particularly some of these good old boys I had to deal with, but, man, it was a hell of a thing, you know, because I've been a kid who'd always got his own way. You know, I'm from here, Santa Barbara, that's where I'm from. And I went to schools here, and I had a great life here, and my parents were nice, and nobody ever beat me, I didn't have much excuse, you know, for turning out this way. And I was kind of always able to get my way. Either by being cute, you know, or being funny, or by talking real fast, or beg, borrowing, stealing, conniving, cajoling my way into whatever the hell it was that I really wanted to do. And I won pretty early at what I chose to be doing. First I got into one group, and that did real well, and then I got into another group, and that did about 5 times as well as that, and then that group added somebody and got 10 times bigger than that. And I never really had to, you know, like, grow up a hell of a lot. And all of a sudden these big doors go clanging, and ain't nobody listening. You can be as cute and funny as you want. They don't give a, you know? The door is not listening. Open sesame. Nothing. You know? And you're in a space about the size of, oh, that part of the table. 2 of you. Gotta work it out with that other guy. You best hope that he's a nice guy. Fortunately, I was old and fat and ugly when I went in. I'm not even gonna get into that whole set of jokes. Okay. But it was immediately a real tough lesson for me. I don't recommend this way of getting straight at all. You know, I don't expect there's a hell of a lot of newcomers here, but if there are, you know, if somebody offers you a chance to go into a rehab as opposed to just letting you slide down the hill to where you wind up in jail, get your ass in the rehab. Let me tell you, right now. Because, man, just the food alone is a serious enough consideration to where you should definitely walk to the rehab if you have to, okay? Texas prison, the food is part of the punishment. And all the same was pork. Who said pork? You know. That's what they feed you. They raise pigs, so they feed you pork. Knuckles. Man, it's bad, terrible food. But, oh, you know, the main thing was that it was a shock to be locked up, and it was a shock to be suddenly straight. Painfully. Agonizingly straight. And it was a shock to be doing it under that circumstance. Frankly, it's worth it, whatever the hell circumstance it has to be. I didn't know that. I had tried, my wife Jan and I had tried several times, like I said, going into hospitals and stuff, and always failed. You know, we'd last like 856,425 seconds. You know what I mean? You'd be counting them all. But I was finally stuck in a place where I didn't have any choice. Nobody was going to give me any. I couldn't get out to get anybody. Any? I couldn't hustle money. I wish I had run out of money before I wound up there. Normally, you know, that's what happens. You hit the skids pretty bad, and then you run out of money. And then you use up, you know, the kid's college fund, and then you sell the couch, and your Volkswagen, and your hat. You know, you sell anything. I would have sold you. And I always had some money coming. Now, I didn't have any money. I didn't have anybody who would pay any attention. And I was going to get straight. And that was it. When I went to jail, now, when you go to jail now, NA, AA, even sometimes CA are in the jails. I went to a great NA meeting at a jail in Hawaii. Man, these guys were hardcore. When I went to jail, there wasn't no meetings. Not in Texas. They hadn't yet decided that it was cool. Texas is a little behind the rest of the world. And, it was a very slow and painful process getting straight without anybody to give you much of a clue. I did get sent books. I got sent an NA book and an AA book from outside. But they don't make a hell of a lot of sense to you without having somebody to say, look, brother, I just went through all of this right in front of you. See, that's the great gift of being in a program like this, is that you got other people gone through it. And they can say, hey, one beer a month is not sober. You know, other little clues like that that'll help you. I didn't have anybody to really help me figure it out. I did survive it. Partly just luck and partly I figured out fairly early on there that if you don't get up in anybody's face and you mind your own business, you can get through that. And when I got out, my wife, who is a very strong person, had been in a rehab that sent her out to all kinds of meetings all day, every day, for the whole time that I was in prison. And she said, come on, let's like really make a stab at it. And I knew I was tired of living the way I had lived. So we made a stab at it. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Anybody ever tells you that it's easy is a liar. They're lying in their teeth. I am not Superman, and when I got out of the joint, I was just shakier than a pillar of jello. I didn't know what to do, where to go, who to turn to, how to make any sense out of my life at all. And without, you know, a couple of good friends and my wife, I probably would have hit the skids again. It didn't happen that way. Somehow, I'm a very lucky guy. I started going to meetings and then more meetings. When I first went to meetings, I didn't, you know, seem like probably most of you, I didn't feel like I was part of it. I didn't particularly, you know, feel like being real honest about whatever I had done, you know, because I really was kind of a shit. I told a lot of lies, I did a lot of stuff I'm not proud of. Fucked over a lot of people, hurt a lot of people. I'll give you an example. I got a daughter who's, she's about 17 now. She had to go to school the next day after People magazine came out and was on every checkout stand of every market in the United States of America saying on the cover how rocker David Crosby ruined his life with cocaine. She had to go to school the next day. That's not cool. That's not even close. We think we live in a vacuum when we're in the middle of it. You know, we're so deep into our denial that we think, hey, it's my life. I want to go to hell in a handbasket. I can do it. Don't you tell me how to live my life. I don't tell you. I said all those things. But we don't live in a vacuum. Everything we do affects other people around us. And that's just one of the things I did. I don't like to admit that one, so I make myself admit it. Because it hurts. And I want it to hurt. Because I don't want to forget. Oh. But there were a lot of them. You know, I had a lot of wreckage. I had been a destructive force in other people's lives. You know, not just blithely derailing people as I went by at speed, but actively hurting people. Lucky I didn't kill somebody. I carried a gun for years. That was all part of a cocaine psychosis. When you're doing as much freebase and cocaine and heroin as I was doing, you think they are out to get you. I'm sure you know about them. I used to call them the Bush people. Oh, you've seen Bush people. Look right over next to the tree. No, move. What's that on the roof? I'm telling you, I heard him talking, and I heard my name. Yes, sir? I used to carry a gun all the time. Colt 45 automatic. I got arrested 3-4 times with a Colt 45 automatic. I was practically supporting the Colt Firearms Company there for a while. Give me another one. They took that one. Sharp. That date is sharp. I don't know how I missed killing anybody, but I didn't. I did do a lot of damage, like I said, though. And when I'm talking to people that are new in this thing, you know, they tend very strongly to think that they are the only person they got to think about. They have already made a break with their family. They tend to, you know, we tend to find one reason or another why it's our family's fault. And, it's all somebody else's fault, isn't it? Everything is. I used to come up with excuses, man, that are legendary. You know? There's still people who talk about the time I didn't show up for rehearsal in San Francisco because I said I didn't have a dollar for the bridge. They claim I was in Palo Alto, but I don't know. We have a lot of excuses why it's somebody else's fault. We have a lot of excuses why we separate away from our family and our loved ones, you know, because we really can't face them. I couldn't. When I say we, I'm talking about me, but I tend to include you guys because I figure an awful lot of you went through an awful lot of the same stuff I did. Forgive me if I insult you in any way by including you, but I tend to think we have a lot of shared experiences. Like I said, when I started going to meetings, I was not real happy. I felt like I had come to meetings in handcuffs, and I didn't really feel like I was part of, you know. And I had no real desire to be honest about what I had done. And I thought, you know, that I was so unique. Well, the same thing happened to me that happens to all of us. You go and you sit down and somebody starts talking. You inevitably, in between your popcorn and your chewing gum, start listening. Wow, he looks clean and everything. He's got a clean shirt on. Son of a gun. And you, some of the load gets lighter right there. You know, some of this, oh, I'm so unique and oh, I'm such a shit heel, gets a little lighter right there. It takes a while to soak in, you know. By listening to other people talk, flat saved my life. Because I'm sure I would not have made it this far if I hadn't been encouraged, you know, to listen to other people and learn from them. Now, it doesn't always work that you learn from them. Sometimes you go to a meeting and somebody gets up and says, "My kitty's sick and they were mean to me at work today and I couldn't find anywhere to park." And you want to go, you know, "I'm trying to save my life! Stop talking about your parking space!" But usually what happens at a meeting is somebody is going to touch your heart. Somebody's going to tell some story, man, that's a part of exactly what you went through. Some place inside you is going to get touched. And that's what happened to me. I think the things I read in books helped. I think getting a sponsor helps. I think going to meetings helps. Listening to people helped me the most of all. Because I had always thought I was better than, smarter than, quicker than, richer than, something than, whatever the hell it was than, everybody. And now I was like a shitheel and lost. And listening to other people pulled me back up to being a human being. And made me feel, you know, that I could be one too. That's now my biggest aim in life, is to just be a decent human being. And I figure that's our responsibility. That's about all we can really, you know. We're not going to get any help from elsewhere. You know. It's only us that have made this choice that are going to help each other. Sure as shit, the government isn't going to do anything about it. That's another pet peeve of mine. I'm so pissed at the government, I'm ready to just, like, well, I'll give them a chance this time. It might get a little better, but I used to go, I have gone and lobbied and talked and tried to talk to people and previous drug enforcement, you know, administrations and stuff, you know, and I can get in the door because I can get some senator who wants me to do some benefit for him to make a call, you know. But man, those people are just flat stupid. And they're not going to help us. You know, they're not even going to help the problem. All they want to do is lie about the problem so that they can claim it didn't happen on their watch. You know, point fingers. What about the drug problem? I'll appoint a commission. We'll find out if there is one. It's enough to piss off the Pope. I can't, you know, I have no slack left for these people. You know, there's good people all the way down. You know, I hate to admit this, but there's good people even in law enforcement. I even met a prison guard who was a decent human being. Now that is really some stretch, man, I'm telling you. It sticks in my craw to say that. But the people in the government, just mostly, at least over the last couple of administrations, have, you know, done their best to lie about the whole thing. And frankly, you know, friendly policeman Bill, your neighborhood guy, ain't going to straighten you out either. We're the only ones who are going to help each other. And we're the only ones I believe in to help anybody coming up. Now, there are those of us who are sort of radicals and feel that. I'm not specifically saying this is me. If it sounds like me, it might be me, but I don't want to admit it. There are some of us who feel that we know that we have the technology to know exactly where all the dope is coming from. And frankly, we do. Those cute little boys down at the NSA can tell you where every coca bush in Peru is. And frankly, I don't think the Ecuadorian Marine Corps could stop us. if we went down and just took them all out of the ground. But I don't want to talk like a radical. Tempting thought, though, isn't it? No. Yes, sir. Go, coffee! If you don't, we'll come back next year. And we'll pull more than the damn bushes out of the ground, you little... But I can't say that to government. What I can say is that we can educate people. You can talk to people. And you can make a difference. There's a whole huge difference between one of y'all going in and talking to a kid who's paid hard dues to get sobriety, to get here, to get straight. Okay? And some sociology teacher, you know, reading out of a book, or Nancy Reagan going, just say no and everything be peachy. The kids tend to dismiss that shit. Because they can tell when you're not telling the truth. And they don't like being talked down to. But if one of us goes up to them and says, hey, you know, I did that. And this is what happened to me. And then this is what happened to me. And then this is what happened to me. I'm not trying to preach to you. I'm just telling you some history here. And then the next thing that happened to me was, you know, they have a sense of that. When you talk to kids, you can make a difference. There is always the hope that if you give them the right information, they will make the right choice. We know what the right choice is. And we know what the right information is. Just tell them the truth. It's rare enough. If you do it, you can change lives. You can affect lives. I think, you know, it's our duty to be there for other people that come to us and say, look, man, I can't handle this thing anymore. I gotta stop, and I don't know how. And I know you did. That person, we're honor bound to be there for that person. You know, you gotta show for that. But I also think that it's part of my program anyway, to go out and like try to at least dispel some of the myths about how all of this, you know, happens. To at least tell the truth to people. Particularly kids. I don't know whether it's going to make a difference, but I always stick that in there because I really have a high hope for it. I envision sometimes when I'm thinking about all of this that there's this long line of people, because I know I am not that smart. Historical fact. I wish I could convince myself I was, but the evidence contradicts it. I envision this long line of people going out over the horizon in whose footsteps I am following. I think that's our great strength. You know, you look at somebody else's life, you look at somebody who's got 10, 15 years, 20 years of staying straight, and you think to yourself, hey, you know something. I want to know it. And you follow. I hope that I get to keep following people in this long line for the rest of my life. I know I only got to worry about it for today, but I would like very much to just keep following this line of people all my life. I've never been so happy. I never felt this good in my life about myself or anything else. I get to be a father to my kid. I get to be a husband to my wife. I get to be a partner to my partners. I get to make the best art I can make. And I get to feel, you know, like I'm learning and trying to be a decent human being. And all that stuff is just nectar to me. It's just the greatest gift possible. And I hope it is to you too. And I sincerely thank you all for letting me come here and talk to you tonight. Thanks.